You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, this is Wesley Ewer from Land of the Lost. I played Will, and my entire performance on that show was, "Run, Holly, run! There's a dinosaur!"
Hi, this is Kathy Coleman.
Hi, this is Phil Paley. I played Chalk on Land of the Lost.
You're listening to the Flopcast.
Flopcast rocks!
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 350.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes. Hello, Cornflake.
Hi, Kevin.
350, that's kind of a big number.
It feels like we should be baking something at that number to celebrate
it's the perfect
this milestone.
Temperature to do a podcast.
Yes.
Flopcast 350, and look who's here to join us for this perfect temperature Flopcast. The mayor of Chickentown is here once again.
Hello, I'm back.
Well, you must be here to talk about dead people again, like last week.
That seems to be the plan, yes.
Welcome back. This year, as an experiment, we're trying to split our annual Flopcast Memorial Show into two shows. So we look back on everyone from the world of pop culture who died in the year 2018. We did half our list last week. We're doing the rest this week.
So or at least that's the plan.
That's the plan.
It may go on for several more weeks. We're not sure.
Stretch this into more shows still. This show comes out while we're at Aresia, by the way. So we're running around Aresia, the big Boston science fiction convention right now.
With a much more lively bunch than the folks we're about to talk about.
Things are alive and well at Aresia, I assume. So if you discovered us at Aresia, welcome to the Flopcast. We don't usually just memorialize people every week. We only do this once a year, or twice a year in this case. That's the plan. But before we get to that, Cornflake, what do you have this week for one thing that we do every week all year? That would be National Whatever Day.
National Whatever Day!
So later on in the year, we're going to have Talk Like a Pirate Day, which I think is fairly well known among geek circles. It's something that sneaks up on me every year, and I'm never really fully prepared. But given that that's so popular, I thought, well, what other days of the year are there where you talk like something? And I've been scouring the calendars trying to find anything like Talk Like a Pirate Day, and I finally found something.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. January 24th is Talk Like a Grizzled Prospector Day. So, well, woo-wee, I reckon we've finally found ourselves a day that I can talk about with some bona fide golden nuggets right here in this old mound of grit. So it's a good day to get out there and call somebody a varmint.
Yeah, I like the concept of a grizzled old prospector. And at the same time, I feel like I don't want to run into anybody talking like one. I am a fan of the character type, though, that you'd see in goofy old movies or cartoons.
It's because they're perpetual optimists, I
think. I like when they start leaping around, you know, one foot to the other. Mm-hmm. They've got their pickaxes and whatnot.
Yeah. If you encounter anyone with a pickaxe on January 24th, run.
All right, what about the Brady Bunch episode?
Yes.
With Thurston Howell.
Yeah, Jim Backus.
Jim Backus as the grizzled prospector that locks them up in the ghost town.
That's,
That was pretty good.
That's the Grand Canyon two-parter.
And then he returns on a later Brady Bunch where he's playing pool against Bobby.
Yes. Same character.
We like to think it's the same character.
He's cleaned up quite a bit. He still has a scrub gold because he's like a wealthy businessman.
Successful businessman. He's de-grizzlified. And he loses like 18 billion packs of gum or something playing pool with Bobby Brady in the garage.
And has to go back to being a grizzled old prospector.
He gets right back where he started, back in a ghost town,
right. Locking
up families so they can die in the desert.
Because you don't choose the grizzled old prospector life. The grizzled old prospector life chooses
you. Yeah, it's a calling. All right, hey, let's get back to our memorial list. Acknowledging all those grizzled old prospectors who died in 2018. Last week, we did the world of acting, and we did the world of comic books and comic strips. We have a bunch more categories to get through this week, but they're much shorter categories. So we're going to try to move quickly and get through the rest of the list right now. Here we go.
We're going to keep drinking if there's somebody that we've met.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime we hit somebody on the list that we've met in person or that we've at least seen in person, we shall take a drink. I have coffee. Cornflake has coffee. The mayor has eggnog.
Eggnog.
And water.
This time I have spiked my eggnog.
Uh-oh. We're boozing it up?
Yep.
For part two of the Memorial Show.
Making the eggnog go a little farther.
Let's see what happens. The category is music. Here we go. Up first, we have Ray Thomas. Ray Thomas was 76. This was the flautist and a founding member of the Moody Blues.
And the Moody Blues were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last year.
Yeah, he just missed the induction ceremony.
Yeah, that's very sad.
By a couple of months, I guess.
Yeah.
So I guess he lived to get the announcement that they were going in the Hall of Fame.
That was good enough for him.
You know, that's right. Yep. So that's it.
I'm out. Give up the ghost at that point.
Yeah, so Ray Thomas, a flautist.
Yeah.
I like that.
Me too.
You don't see a lot of rock bands with flute players these days.
But there should be more of them.
There should be a lot more.
Moody Blues demonstrates that.
You got Jethro Tull. They're still around.
Weren't Jethro Tull also inducted?
Jethro Tull has not been inducted.
Really?
Is there room for two flautists in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? That remains to be seen. What about Zamfir? When are they going to let in the pan flute?
Pan flute, that's different.
All right,
call him a pan flautist?
Yes, I guess. I don't know.
Wow.
That is Ray Thomas from the Moody Blues.
I've never thought of that.
Dolores O'Riordan.
Yeah, that's sad.
She was 46.
Made me sad.
This was the front woman, of course, of the Cranberries.
My high school years wouldn't have been the same without her.
Irish rock band. They got a very big kind of alt-rock band in the 90s. They had a bunch of hits. They were big.
Mm-hmm.
I saw them live at Great Woods.
All right, then we have to
drink up, everybody. I saw Dolores perform live. She was good.
Was the Cranberries the main act that you were going to see? Or
yes, they were headlining. Okay. I'm trying to remember who the opening band was. I'm not quite sure. I'll have to think about that.
Dolores O'Riordan was definitely a hero of mine.
Yeah?
Yes.
She was good. The Cranberries. Here's an odd one, but I have my reasons for including Pat Torpy was 64. He was the drummer in Mr. Big, one of those hair metal bands, you know?
Oh.
You know Mr. Big?
I know Mr. Big? Yes. Yes, I do.
They were pretty big, like in the early 90s.
They had that one song.
Yeah, To Be With You.
To Be With You. But I knew all the songs on that album.
Oh, I didn't realize you were a Mr. Big fan.
Oh, heck yes.
Wow. All right.
Well, I could see how that one song would appeal to you, and then you would check out the rest, because it's got some nice a cappella harmonies in that.
Yeah, and the rest of the album rocks pretty hard.
Yeah, and that was the formula back then. Every hair metal band had their one slow, Every Rose Has Its Thorn kind of song.
But I liked To Be With You way better than I liked Every Rose Has Its Thorn.
Yeah, I liked To Be With You too.
So Pat Torpy was their drummer, but he played drums with Belinda Carlisle and with Robert Plant, with The Knack. You know, he's one of those drummers that just worked with a lot of different, John Parr, worked with a lot of people back then. The reason that he caught my eye was actually Robbie Rist from the Brady Bunch, you know?
Cousin Oliver.
Cousin Oliver. Robbie Rist posted a clip online when Pat died. It was a clip from Dance Fever, the old goofy music show from the 70s and 80s, I guess. It was Pat Torpy playing drums on Dance Fever with Kid Video. Robbie Rist, of course, was a member of Kid Video, the Saturday morning cartoon band. They actually performed live.
I had no idea.
Or lip syncing, I guess.
Yeah.
Nobody probably really performed live on Dance Fever, but Kid Video went on Dance Fever. And the girl from the show, I guess she wasn't actually in the live band for that day, so they brought in Pat Torpy.
Instead of
the girl you see on the cartoon, Pat was the drummer in Kid Video on Dance Fever. And I find that kind of amazing.
Yeah.
And so Pat Torpy. Here's another guy. This is another one of these drummers that played with everybody back then. This is a guy named Charlie Quintana. He was only 56, but Charlie played with Social Distortion, I think, for quite a while, and with Cracker. Remember Cracker?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I like them. Maybe Cracker was who was opening for the Cranberries. I'm not kidding. That might have been the opening band for the Cranberries.
Total sauce.
Very alliterative.
I think it may have been. I'm not sure.
Crackers and cranberry also sounds like something you'd serve as an appetizer.
Delicious. Absolutely. Anyway, I saw Charlie Quintana several times because in the mid-90s, Charlie was part of Joan Osborne's band.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
When I first discovered Joan Osborne. This is before she got famous, but I saw her opening for a band. And then for a couple years, I would go see Joan anytime she came around. And back then, her band included Charlie Quintana on the drums.
All right, so we're drinking.
Yeah.
Drink up for Charlie, yes.
Was Jack Petrozelli in the band as well?
Yes, Jack Petrozelli was the guitarist at that point as well. Yeah, great, great band Joan had back then. Yvonne Staples was 80 years old, and of course, you know, Staples as in the Staple Singers. Mm-hmm. She's one of those Staple Singers. They're in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
As in Mavis Staples?
Yes.
Wow.
You know the Staples.
I do.
And they're like a gospel R&B band, had a lot of hits in the 70s. I'll Take You There. Mm-hmm. Yvonne Staples. Somebody else from a big music family is Charles Neville.
One of the Neville Brothers.
79. He was the saxophonist of the Neville Brothers, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Danny Kirwan was 68. This was the guitarist in the original, the blues lineup of Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, wow. Yeah. There's been a ton of people in that band.
This is another guy who's in the Hall of Fame as one of the part of the original lineup of Fleetwood Mac. This is, you know,
Peter Green
version. Yes, this is pre-Lindsay, pre-Stevie.
My goodness.
The blues version was Danny Kirwan on the guitar. DJ Fontana was 87. This is another guy who's in the Hall of Fame in the side musician category. DJ Fontana was Elvis Presley's drummer for about 15 years.
This is not a good year to be a drummer.
We lost a lot of drummers this year. So yeah, very important in the early days of rock and roll. DJ Fontana. Matt Guitar Murphy was 88. Classic blues guitarist, of course, and also appeared on screen. Did some acting in the Blues Brothers.
Part of their band.
Part of the Blues Brothers band as well, of course. Matt Guitar Murphy. You know I'm a huge Bay City Rollers fan.
Yes.
And we lost part of the classic lineup of the Bay City Rollers this year was Alan Longmire, was the bass player. Mm. He was 70 years old, but he was part of that classic lineup in the mid-70s. The lineup that went on the Croft Super Show.
Yeah. I didn't realize the band had other lineups.
Yeah, there were some personnel changes over the years. So like the classic five.
Yeah.
Included Alan and the guys that were on the Croft Saturday morning show.
But they all wore plaid, right? Over the years.
They wore their plaid. Oh, yeah. And one of the big ones this year, of course, Aretha.
Yeah.
Aretha Franklin was 76. Also from the Blues Brothers, of course.
Here's
someone also, of course, very famously acted in the Blues Brothers, in addition to such a magnificent career.
I think the Blues Brothers is where I first became aware of her.
Yeah.
I did a report on her back in grade school.
Oh, neat.
The interesting thing about Aretha Franklin, she's one of the few acts that I know of that has done a duet that has made it to the top 40 with somebody else who has the same birthday as her. And that's Elton John.
Oh, what was their duet?
It was Through the Storm.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Weird piece of trivia there. That's good. She did the duet with George Michael also. I Knew You Were Waiting.
Yes.
Yeah. And George and Elton did some singing together as
yes,
well. See,
still,
it makes like a triangle. But yeah, to our generation really got that 80s burst of Aretha because she had those kind of poppy hits through the Freeway of Love and Who's Zoomin' Who.
Oh, loved that.
She had a nice little 80s comeback in addition to all the classic 60s stuff.
And working with the Eurythmics, sisters are doing it for themselves.
Right, right.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah,
that song's fantastic.
Some fun kind of late career stuff from Aretha, one of the all-time classics. She was, I think we mentioned this on the show once before, but Aretha was the first woman inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in the second class in 1987.
Yeah.
The Hall of Fame started in 86, mm-hmm. You know, all dudes first year, but in 87, they inducted Aretha.
I remember that from my sixth grade report, that she was one of the...
Well, sure, you must be an expert.
She was the first woman into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I think you're the only one in the room who's written a report on Aretha Franklin. I was too busy writing about the Bay City Rollers.
Yes.
I wish I was making that up. Marty Balin. He was 76, and we know Marty from Jefferson Airplane and Jefferson Starship.
And from the Star Wars Holiday Special?
Yes, and from the Star Wars Holiday Special.
He would have been in that incarnation.
He was in the band at that point, yes.
Wow.
When the Jefferson Starship makes their bizarre appearance in the Star Wars Holiday Special, Marty is in that video, absolutely.
In holographic form.
As a hologram. And Marty also had a big hit solo song a few years after that, in the early 80s. He had a song called Hearts.
Mm.
And it's sort of one of those soft rock, light rock kind of songs. Really nice, but it was a big hit. You'd know it if you heard it.
I probably
would. Yeah, it's good. Marty Balin. Hugh McDowell, a cellist.
Wow.
We had a flautist. Now here's a cellist from the Electric Light Orchestra back in the early 70s. And also he left ELO and was a founding member of Wizard.
Wizard.
Yeah. Oh,
Wizard made my favorite Christmas song.
Sure they did.
I wish it could be Christmas every day.
They're one of those early... How do you describe Wizard? Were they glam?
I think they're kind of glam.
Yep. because they were never big in America.
No, they certainly look
very big in England.
Yeah, they certainly look pretty goofy in the video for that song.
So this dude, Hugh McDowell, he played cello with ELO and then with Wizard, and then I think he went back to ELO at some point. Mm-hmm. Some serious celling going on in the 70s.
Yes.
Roy Clark was 85 and a country singer, and this was the guy on Hee Haw.
All right.
Uh-huh.
Here's your host on Hee Haw.
There you go.
I was not a Hee Haw viewer, but I remember it being around, because you'd be flipping the channels around, like, yeah. Oops, uh-oh, there's Hee Haw.
Yeah, I was not an intentional Hee Haw viewer.
Oh, yeah, you dive on the... Yeah, I was going to say the remote, but I think this was probably pre-remote in my house.
Yeah,
same.
You have to run across the room and dive for the knob.
Fling yourself at the dial. TV. No, not Hee Haw.
That is not a knock on Roy Clark. I know he was a very talented country performer, and people loved seeing him every week on Hee Haw. Norman Gimbel was 91, and this is a songwriter with some impressive songwriting credits. So not a name that I knew, but this guy wrote The Girl from Ipanema.
Oh.
He wrote Killing Me Softly with his song.
Oh, for Roberta Flack.
Which was a big hit for Roberta Flack. He wrote I Got a Name, the Jim Croce song.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Then he wrote a lot for TV and movies and stuff. And get this, here's where it gets impressive for our purposes. He wrote the lyrics for the theme songs to The Bugaloos.
Oh.
Croft Saturday Morning Show, you know? Happy Days.
What?
Laverne and Shirley.
Oh.
Angie. That's the part that only impresses me.
Yeah.
The room goes silent for the late 70s sitcom Angie, which I was a big fan of. I'm going to bring this back. And Wonder Woman.
All right.
Like the Linda Carter Wonder Woman lyrics this guy wrote.
Yeah, that's the most important credit.
Norman Gimbel.
Absolutely.
And he also wrote the music for Puffin' Stuff, not the TV show, but the movie, the Puffin' Stuff movie in 1970. Right. So there you go, Norman Gimbel.
I haven't heard of that I've Got a Name song forever, and now it's going to be happily playing through my head as we talk about all these dead people.
Whereas the theme from Angie is what's playing in my head.
Yes.
Yeah, but that's been going for like 3 weeks now anyway. I cannot explain why.
All right, I'll take the Wonder Woman theme then.
One more from our music category. That's Ray Sawyer. Was 81. This was one of the lead vocalists, among others, and instrumentalists in Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show.
Oh.
Sort of a wacky hippie band from the 70s.
Yeah, I really only know that one song by them.
They had a bunch of songs, but he was the lead singer on one of their early big songs, was the cover of Rolling Stone.
Okay, yeah, I know that song.
I think Shel Silverstein might have written the lyrics for it. They did a couple of songs that Shel...
That sounds likely.
And then at some point, they kind of de-hippified a little bit. And they shortened the name. Instead of Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show, they shortened it to just Dr. Hook.
Okay.
And they kept going into like the late 70s, early 80s. They had a few more hits, and it was more soft rock style. It was a little goofy still, but like Sharing the Night Together, and then they had a few like that. Dr. Hook. And I think the name came in part from Ray Sawyer, because he wore the eye patch for real.
Uh-huh.
Like, he had an actual eye injury and wore... That was his look, was the eye patch and the cowboy hat. Dr. Hook. New category. You ready?
Yes.
Let's go. Category is cartoons, kids' TV, voice actors, that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And we're going to start with Carol Hart, was 74. Carol was one of the early developers of Sesame Street.
Oh, yeah.
She wrote a lot of the early episodes of Sesame Street. And she also was one of the producers of Free to Be You and Me. Which I'm not a fan of, but
I'm a huge fan of Free to Be You and Me.
I recognize its importance. Speaking of the hippie era.
Yes.
It was a hippie era kid show. Doug Young was 98 years old, a voice actor, did a lot of smaller parts in a lot of Hanna-Barbera cartoons back in the 60s. The Grand Poobah of the Water Buffaloes on the Flintstones was this guy. Doggy Daddy, isn't he?
Doggy
and Doggy Daddy.
Yeah.
So that was a voice that he really based on Jimmy Durante.
Yeah.
He was the original voice. I think another guy took over the voice at some point, but he was the original. And many, many more beyond that, Doug Young. Doreen Tracy was 74, and this was one of the original Mouseketeers.
Wow.
The old Mickey Mouse Club in the 50s. Running around with Annette and all the rest of them. Cubby.
Yeah.
Larry Smith was 79. This is not a super famous guy, but this is one of those regional kids' hosts.
Okay.
This is a guy that for decades worked in kids' TV in the Cincinnati area in like the 50s, 60s, 70s. The reason I took note of him is that among his puppets, he did like a big puppet show. It was very much like the neighborhood and make-believe, that kind of a thing. But one of his puppets was Rudy the Rooster.
Oh.
This guy had a chicken puppet, and so he makes our
list.
All
right, that's very important.
So Larry Smith and Rudy the Rooster. Moving along, we have Bud Lucky, was 83. He was a voice actor, but mainly an animator, and did character design on a lot of the Pixar movies.
Oh.
But also before that, going back to the 70s, I did a lot of animation on the cereal commercials.
Uh-huh.
He would animate like Frosted Flakes, Tony the Tiger.
Yeah, they're
and,
great.
The Fruit Loops commercials with Toucan Sam. The Rice Krispies commercials with Snap, Crackle, and Pops.
Is one of this guy?
Yeah. Most importantly, we mentioned Sesame Street earlier.
Yeah.
This guy did a lot of the early cartoons for Sesame Street, including Ladybug's Picnic.
Yes!
That's about the size of it.
Oh, that's the
best.
Right
between the eyes.
No, you would think that was the best, but I've got the best
okay.
here. The third and final one I'm going to name. Number 7, The Alligator King.
Yes!
We love those cartoons. So that was Bud Lucky. Nice work. Frank Avrich was 89, and this was one of those original Bozo the Clown guys. This gets complicated because there's so many bozos in the old days. But this Bozo, Frank Avrich, he was Bozo from 1959 to 1970. He was the first nationally syndicated Bozo.
Oh, neat.
And this note also says he worked at WCVB in Boston.
Hey.
He's a local guy for more than 40 years.
My goodness.
Pretty good. Fred Crippen was 90 years old, and this was the creator of Roger Ramjet. In the 60s, this was a pretty big cartoon, very goofy cartoon, sort of a goofy superhero character. Mm-hmm. He was like a superhero government agent sort of a character, Roger Ramjet. It was a very fast-paced, very silly cartoon. I've seen a little bit of it. It's very fondly remembered. Roger Ramjet by Fred Crippen. Burt Boyar was also 90 years old, and a voice actor from way back in the 40s on radio, a couple of important credits. He was the voice of Archie when there was an Archie radio show in the mid-40s. They also did a Captain Marvel radio show back then.
Cool.
As in, you know, Shazam,
yeah.
Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. And he was also the voice of Billy Batson. There's some big credits on this guy, Burt Boyar. This was a big one. Chuck McCann was 83.
Wow.
And a major children's entertainer. He did so many cartoons and commercials and kids shows. He hosted kids shows and did tons of stuff. I think Cornflake, you would know him. He was the voice of Duckworth on the DuckTales.
Woo!
Did voices on G.I. Joe. He was the Thing on the Fantastic Four cartoon, the 90s version.
Oh, the 90s
version. Not the old 60s version,
yeah.
But the 90s version. And a million things beyond that. I knew him best from Far Out Space Nuts. And that
Croft
was,
show.
Yeah, from Croft. Yeah, that was a live action. That was not a cartoon, but a live Croft show, and that was like Gilligan's Island in space, where he was the skipper, essentially.
And Bob Denver was...
Yeah. And Gilligan was Gilligan. Chuck McCann and Bob Denver accidentally get launched into space, and now they're far out space nuts. It was a great show. Chuck McCann. Bob Dureau. Here we go. Bob Dureau was 94, and of course, this was the principal songwriter of Schoolhouse Rock, and also the singer of many, many of the Schoolhouse Rock classics.
Right. Almost all of them, Multiplication Rock.
Yeah, well, he was the first. Schoolhouse Rock started with Multiplication Rock. That was the first batch of songs that they made. And so because he was on board first and wrote most, if not all, of that first batch of songs, mm-hmm. and then many of the rest of them.
So he, of course, is the singer on Three's a Magic Number.
Three's a Magic Number, My Hero Zero, Lucky Seven Samson, Little 12 Toes.
My favorite.
Good 11.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of the... Multiplication ones, plus a bunch more.
Sure.
You know, Body Machine, Adverbs, Lolly Lolly, get your adverbs here. Busy Prepositions in the 90s. Because again, all these people kept working. When they would revive Schoolhouse Rock in the 90s, they brought all those same people back. So he finally got to do his preposition song, The Missing Part of Speech. Of course, he's most remembered for Schoolhouse Rock, but he was a very respected jazz musician, even outside of Schoolhouse Rock, like in the serious world of jazz. He was considered one of the best. Bob Dureau. Will Vinton was 70 years old, and this is the claymation guy. This is the California Raisins guy.
Aha.
And he made that really bizarre Adventures of Mark Twain that I made you watch a couple years ago.
Yeah, I'd never seen that movie, Adventures of Mark Twain, until last year or whatever.
Yeah, that's a movie that my brother and I really got fixated on.
And that was from the mid-80s, I think? Yeah, it's great. It's bizarre and amazing and fascinating to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, his superstardom really came with the Raisins.
Yes.
Turns out what America was waiting for in the mid-80s was...
could not get enough of.
We want to see Clay Raisins dancing to Motown hits.
I never stopped wanting that.
That's what he gave us. I know that Christmas, the Claymation Christmas special is much loved as well.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that thing in a long time.
Oh, I wonder if...
That must be around. I bet we could track that down. We haven't been watching enough Christmas specials.
Oh, gosh.
Why cap it at 87 Christmas specials? Let's add another one. Will Vinton. Ray Favada was 94. Another animator. He animated Sugar Bear. So I guess that means he worked on the Super Sugar Crisp.
Yeah.
Another serial animator guy, I guess. The Doug cartoons in the 90s he worked on. My Little Pony, I think, in the 80s he worked on.
Wow.
My favorite credit of his that I found, though, this is the guy that animated the opening sequence of The Great Space Coaster.
Nice.
So he worked with a friend of ours, right? Jim Martin, friend of the show, from Gary Gnu, The Great Space Coaster. Ray Favada.
I was a Doug devotee.
Oh, yeah? That was a little after my time. I know of it. I never saw it. Rick Reinert. He was 93 years old, another animator. He animated the opening sequence, I think, for the after-school special.
Oh.
For the ABC Weekend special. And a couple years after that, remember Captain O.G. Readmore?
No.
It was also part of those weekend special kind of cartoons. It was like a cat that was dressed like a sea captain.
Yeah.
When is Talk Like an Old Cat Sea Captain Day around again?
I'm going to have to do a little more research to get the answer to that.
That might be next week.
Right.
Steven Hillenburg was only 57, and this was the creator of SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah. This was sad.
I was not familiar with his name until he died and got a lot of attention, as he should. Sure. But then, you'd hear the stories how he was a marine biologist.
Yeah.
And then got into animation. So that was the perfect character for him to create, Steven Hillenburg. Audrey Geisel was 97. This is the widow of Ted Geisel, of Dr. Seuss.
Yes.
So she was kind of the caretaker of the Dr. Seuss properties and remained active. Like, even she was a producer on that new Grinch movie that they just made this past year. Audrey Geisel. And finally in this category, we have Don Lusk was 105.
What?
Another animator, and I think this may have been the last of the classic Disney animators.
Mm-hmm.
This guy worked on, get ready for this, he worked on Pinocchio, Fantasia. He was hired by Disney in 1933.
Wow.
So Pinocchio, Fantasia, Bambi, Song of the South, Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland, Peter Pan, Lady and the Tramp, Sleeping Beauty, 101 Dalmatians. And then kept on working in the 70s, he worked on Peanuts.
Cool.
He animated a lot of the Peanuts specials in the 70s.
Wow.
So how about that?
That's an important guy.
I think that may have been the last guy left that had those kind of crazy Disney credits on his resume. Amazing. On we go. New category. This is writers and directors and that sort of people. And we're starting with Stephen Bochco.
I forgot that he passed away.
Yeah, he was 74. And man, one of the great TV producers. And he's one of those guys that really, he would push the envelope.
Sure.
He was like, we're going to take it up a level, you know? And he did that with Hill Street Blues, which is so revolutionary. After all those cop shows of the 70s would just be in that formula, you know, Kojak and Quincy. And those were fun shows, but he was like, no. We're going to do this for real. This is Hill Street Blues. Mm-hmm. And it was like an explosion into what you could do with a TV show, that you could take it seriously like a movie. And he created L.A. Law after that, which again was still pushing in that direction. And then especially NYPD Blue.
Sure.
Was suddenly, let's raise the stakes even more. Yeah. Now let's, how far can we push the language? How much skin can we show on ABC? Then they got in trouble eventually. They didn't reel it in. They were taking it so far. And then I think it was post Janet Nipplegate. They had to reel it in.
They were just like sticking their wrists out, waiting for them to be slapped.
It was a great show, though.
Yes.
Even beyond that, they were trying to be as outrageous as they could. But it was also a really great, great show. But besides the cop shows and the law shows, he created Doogie Howser, MD. He would just try to do crazy new concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wonderful.
Wait, was he responsible for Cop Rock?
Yes. Yeah, sometimes they worked, sometimes they didn't.
I just heard someone mention Cop Rock the other day.
Do you remember Cop Rock?
I do not.
Get ready for this, Cornflake. Cop Rock was a police drama show that was also a musical.
Was it like the cop equivalent of Glee?
Yes. The police would all break into song.
Wow. That kind of works for a commercial, but not for a show.
It was a police drama musical. It lasted a few episodes.
Yes, it was a famous flop.
But I like that he tried it,
mm-hmm.
He was not afraid to try something crazy. Capital Critters was also his. That was in the wake of The Simpsons when they were trying out all those other cartoons, and that was the cartoon starring like vermin that lived in the White House.
Yeah, I never saw that.
That was Bochco also. Milos Forman was 86. You must know some of his stuff.
Yes, he was a very prolific film director, and actually one of my favorite films that he did was Valmont, which was the same story as Dangerous Liaisons, but it came out like the following year.
I figured you would go way deeper on this guy than I do.
Yeah.
The titles that I noted were One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of Amadeus.
Yeah.
Man on the Moon, the Jim Carrey, Andy Kaufman movie, and People vs. Larry Flint. But I did not see the one that you named, and I don't even remember what you said.
Well, Valmont.
Valmont. Okay. Would I like that? No.
Well, did you like Dangerous Liaisons? Did you see Dangerous Liaisons?
I remember one particular scene with Uma Thurman.
Yes. I'm sure you do.
And I've forgotten pretty much the entire rest of it. Thank you. Stephen Hilliard Stern was 80 years old and not a super well-known director, but he had some credits worth mentioning, including Mazes and Monsters.
Yes!
Which was the made-for-TV movie with a thinly disguised Dungeons and Dragons, which was going to corrupt the youth of America.
Mm-hmm. With Chris Makepeace.
Chris Makepeace, of course, from Meatballs, Rudy the Rabbit. This was one of his other starring roles, was in Mazes and Monsters, and, of course, Tom Hanks.
Mm-hmm.
Early role of Tom Hanks. It's a dreadful, bizarre movie, which I'm strangely fascinated by. This guy directed Mazes and Monsters. His first movie was in 1971. It's called B.S. I Love You.
B.S.
Not a very well-known movie, but I recognize that title because I happen to know Joanna Cameron is one of the stars of that movie. So
this is Isis.
Isis. This is a few years before she would become Isis in the Secrets of Isis on Saturday mornings. The other credit we have for this dude, Stephen Hilliard Stern, was Still the Beaver. So this is another made-for-TV thing.
Yeah.
This was the Leave It to Beaver reunion movie, which led to the Leave It to Beaver reunion series in the 80s. So Stephen Hilliard Stern. Maybe not the most important director in history, but those are three important credits for the likes of us.
Yes.
Here's a controversial dude. Harlan Ellison was 84, an important writer in science fiction and kind of changing the game in the world of science fiction as a writer of short stories and movies and TV and comics. I have not read a lot of Harlan Ellison. I've read a handful of his short stories.
Did he write for the 80s Twilight Zone?
Yes.
Yeah,
the 80s revival of Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
He did a little bit of, I think.
That's where I would have encountered him.
Yeah, he wrote one episode of Star Trek, famously, City on the Edge of Forever, A Boy and His Dog, which is a science fiction movie with Don Johnson
as well.
Yeah, I think I saw that once. I rented that at some point. they did a comic book series in the 90s called Dream Corridor, which was a comic book adaptations of a lot of his stories, and that was very good. And some of his stories I have read, but not too much. A problematic dude, to say the least.
Safe to say.
But a noteworthy writer, nevertheless, Harlan Ellison. Neil Simon was 91, and, you know, The Odd Couple, of course, would be the big one for me, I think, from Neil Simon.
Very important playwright, and many of his plays were turned into movies.
Yeah.
The Out-of-Towners.
I'm a big fan of The Out-of-Towners. I never saw the remake. The Steve Martin remake, I don't know, but the original. Jack Lemmon original, I'm a huge fan of. That's a great movie.
And Biloxi Blues and Brighton Beach Memoirs.
Yes, I saw those. I'm not sure if I ever saw the movie version of Odd Couple.
No, I haven't.
The Walter Matthau, Jack Lemmon movie. I don't think I ever saw it. Although I certainly was a huge fan of the Klugman Randall TV series version. And I saw the play a few years ago with Sherman Helmsley from The Jeffersons as Oscar. And it was supposed to be Pat Morita from Karate Kid as Felix, but he had to drop out for health reasons. They brought in another guy to play Felix. But I did see Sherman Helmsley, George Jefferson, as Oscar Madison, as written by the great Neil Simon. Gary Kurtz was 78. This is the producer that worked with George Lucas back in the old days. So he worked on American Graffiti and on Star Wars and on Empire. Then I think he dropped out after Empire Strikes Back. But then he went on without Lucas to The Dark Crystal.
Yes.
So this guy did some good, important work. Gary Kurtz. William Goldman was 87.
Of course.
Probably best known for The Princess Bride.
Yes.
He wrote the book, which I have not read, but I hear good things.
While this show is airing, we're all at Aresia this weekend, and one of the events going on involves the Tesseract players, which includes friend of ours, AJ, and they shadow cast Princess Bride. So that's one of the events that's actually underway this weekend.
They're doing that again this weekend at Aresia.
Yes. The movie.
I saw them do that once a couple of years ago, I think. That is William Goldman. And he did a lot beyond Princess Bride, of course. He was the screenwriter on Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and All the President's Men and wrote all kinds of stuff beyond that. William Goldman. Finally, in this category, we have Gloria Katz was 76. This is somebody else who worked with George Lucas back in the old days. Also worked on American Graffiti. And uncredited, apparently, was very important in the development of Star Wars.
Okay.
Like, she fixed the script. Like, apparently there were major issues with how the script was working, and she quietly fixed it.
Right.
And even the Princess Leia character, apparently, she gets a lot of credit for punching up in the script. So, yeah, good job, Gloria. She also worked on Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Mm-hmm. And, most importantly, Howard the Duck.
Oh.
My favorite. New category. That is wrestling. And we're starting with Emily Dole, better known as Mountain Fiji, back on GLOW, the gorgeous ladies of wrestling back in the 80s. She was only 60, and she was one of the stars of the documentary that they did. There's the new TV show based on GLOW these days, but there was a documentary maybe 4 or 5 years ago about the original 80s run of GLOW, and they really feature Emily, Mountain Fiji, in that documentary, and she kind of steals your heart, you know, just this very sweet woman, and she was a big lady and had some major health issues, I think, after some years of wrestling.
Yeah. So the character of Machu Picchu on the Netflix series is kind of based on her.
Yes, absolutely. So that is Emily. All right, everybody else in the wrestling category I have seen in person.
Oh, okay, so we're going to
take a collective drink at some point, but we're going to start with Luscious Johnny Valiant, was 71. He was a wrestler and a manager. I think I knew him mostly as a manager, but part of the Valiant family. I think he had brothers. There were other Valiant brothers in wrestling, but Luscious Johnny Valiant was the manager of Brutus Beefcake and Greg the Hammer Valentine for the WWF in the 80s. Bruno Sammartino was 82. That's pretty old for a wrestler.
Yeah, I was going to say.
A lot of these guys die really young.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Sad to say. That's a rough life.
Yeah.
But Bruno Sammartino was one of the great champions in the history of wrestling. He had a long run as champion in the 60s and again in the 70s. They really pushed him as this like Italian-American hero. I think gets a lot of credit for how popular wrestling got as it grew. By the time I was watching wrestling in the 80s, he had pretty much retired and he became a commentator. So he'd be on the wrestling shows Saturday morning every week doing the play-by-play commentary. And at that point, they started calling him the living legend, Bruno Sammartino.
Wow.
And now we move to Nikolai Volkov, was 70 years old, and one of the great heel wrestlers, one of the great villains of wrestling in the 80s, certainly the perfect Cold War era villain, Nikolai Volkov from the Soviet Union. And he would come out with his tag team partner, the Iron Sheik, of course.
Yep.
But, you know, Nikolai's move was they'd come out, they'd be introduced, and then he would wave the ring announcer over and explain something to him off mic.
In Russian.
The announcer would take the mic and say, "Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Volkov asks that you now all rise and respect his singing of the Soviet national anthem."
Which, of course, was not respected.
As I recall, the audience was less than respectful at that point. But Nikolai and Iron Sheik and their manager, Classy Freddy Blassie, would stand there in a line saluting while Nikolai would sing the Soviet national anthem. And he would sing quite well, I should say. That guy had a voice on him. I also loved him in the Cyndi Lauper Goonies Are Good Enough music video.
Which had
a lot of wrestlers in it.
Sure.
He was very funny in that. Always very, very funny. I saw him wrestle many times back in the 80s because I would go to all the live wrestling back then whenever they'd come to town. And I saw him just a couple of years ago. Very recently, he was on the convention circuit. He was at Super Megafest signing autographs within the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nikolai Volkov. Jim the Anvil Neidhart was only 63, and he was part of another one of the major tag teams from the WWF back in the 80s, the Hart Foundation. That was Jim the Anvil Neidhart and Bret the Hitman Hart. And Jim was the one with the crazy pointy goatee. And their manager, of course, the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart.
You've met.
Yes, I've met Jimmy Hart a couple of times, and I certainly saw Jim the Anvil Neidhart wrestle many times back in the 80s. And one more, another tag team guy from the 80s, WWF, the Dynamite Kid, was 60 years old. Tom Billington was his actual name, but we knew him as the Dynamite Kid. The team was Davy Boy Smith and the Dynamite Kid, and they were collectively known as the British Bulldogs. Very popular tag team in the 80s, and they were the tag team champions for quite a while back then.
Were they actually British?
I'm pretty sure they both were actually British. And they had a bulldog with them. They had a pet bulldog named Matilda, which they would carry around with them.
Oh, that is cute.
They put on a great show. These were guys that would jump off the top ropes and do a lot of flips and flying and stuff. Very acrobatic, very entertaining performers. The Dynamite Kid from the British Bulldogs. All right, that's the wrestling category. We're getting towards the end. Mm-hmm. Onward we go. This is a miscellaneous category.
Sure.
Anybody that I didn't stick in any other category. And we're starting with Barry Crimmins, who I have seen in person a couple of times. Barry Crimmins was only 64 and not somebody super well known, probably on a national basis, although he did have some nationwide success. But he was a comedian, one of the original comedians of the Boston comedy scene when it first started growing in the 70s and through the early 80s. He's one of the guys that really built that scene that guys like Stephen Wright became a part of, Bobcat Goldthwait.
And Bobcat Goldthwait made a film about him.
Yeah, there's a movie called Call Me Lucky, which Bobcat directed. It's a documentary about Barry Crimmins. Came out a few years ago. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a great, great movie.
It's really awesome.
Barry had a very dark, sad life, went through a lot, had his struggles. Really kind of got out of stand-up comedy and was more of a writer and a speaker and a thinker and an activist, and had a lot of really interesting things to say. I saw him in the early 90s opening for Stephen Wright.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this was at Symphony Hall
in
Boston. And I remember Barry Crimmins coming out on stage because this is a guy that had spent the last 15 years probably just working in filthy, smoke-filled comedy clubs.
Yeah.
And I remember watching Barry Crimmins walk out onto the stage at Symphony Hall, just kind of looked around the room, and he just said, all right, this will do. And then he went into his act. Mm-hmm. And I saw him at, I think, the Orpheum Theater many years after that, opening, strangely, for Dar Williams.
Oh,
well, that's neat.
Because Dar will have some weird openers sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
She'll have poets and speakers and things. And yeah, she had Barry opening for her. So I saw him a couple of times doing some strange opening sets. It's a... People, if you don't know Barry Crimmins, look him up. A good place to start is the movie. And it's probably still on Netflix, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Look up the movie Call Me Lucky. It's amazing. Barry Crimmins. Jim Hendricks was 68, and I know Jim Hendricks as Commander USA, as in Commander USA's Groovy Movies, which was on the USA Network cable channel back in the 80s. He was a movie host, like Elvira or one of those goofy movie hosts. Not really a horror host. He was more of a comedy superhero type.
Yeah.
Like his character was, he would come out and say, Commander USA, soaring superhero, Legion of Decency, retired.
So Legion of Decency.
He was supposed to be like a washed up old retired superhero.
Yes.
And so he just looked ridiculous, goofy costume. And he was very, very funny and would just host a bad horror movie, stupid science fiction movie. And so I would watch Commander USA every week. One of his regular bits that he would do, he'd say, all right, we're going to hear from my pal Lefty. And then he'd hold up his hand, take his cigar out of his mouth, and draw a smiley face on his hand and say, this is my friend Lefty.
That's creepy.
Wow.
Commander USA. Look him up, kids, if you haven't seen Commander USA. I think there's some clips online. Mm-hmm. Check out Commander USA. Very funny guy, Jim Hendricks. Mitzi Shore was 87, and this is the woman that ran the Comedy Store.
Wow.
At legendary comedy club in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And this is where Robin Williams, Jay Leno, David Letterman, this is where everybody started in the 70s and 80s. Everybody came up through the Comedy Store in Los Angeles. So she was a super important woman in the rise of modern American comedy. She was really the person that would get these guys that exposure back then. And controversial as well. And people have their issues with some of the stuff she did. Was not popular. And we acknowledge that. But she was very important. Nonetheless, Mitzi Shore is Pauly Shore's mother, I should say. So people that know Pauly Shore, that's Pauly's mom, Mitzi Shore. Carl Castle, I know that you were a fan of, right?
Yeah.
From NPR?
Wow. Yep.
Yes. He had retired a few years back from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, but he was still the, he was actually still doing the voice on the answering machine that you could win as a prize.
Yeah, I remember that was a big deal. So it's like, win Carl Castle's voice on your answering machine.
But even before he passed away, they had changed that to win the voice of anyone on our show that you choose.
Could I get Nikolai Volkov singing the Soviet national anthem on my answering machine? Could they make that happen over at NPR?
If anyone can do it, they can.
If I pledge enough?
He'd have to be the one that we reanimate on our roof then.
I think so.
Don Bustany was 89 in Cornflake. I gotta tell you, this was a childhood friend of Casey Kasem, and together they co-created American Top 40.
Wow.
Yes.
Neat.
So there's an important guy, Don Bustany. Ted Dabney was 81, and he was, along with Nolan Bushnell, the co-founder of Atari.
Oh.
And also one of the main creative forces behind Pong.
Yes.
So come on. It all starts with this guy.
Yes.
That's important. Anthony Bourdain.
Oh, yes.
He was only 61, and I was never an Anthony Bourdain guy. I knew who he was, and he did, like, travel food shows.
Yeah.
And not somebody that we know super well, but certainly popular guy. Adrian Cronauer was 79. I just thought this was interesting. This was the guy, as in Good Morning Vietnam, this was the real guy that Robin Williams played in the movie, the actual DJ in Vietnam. I remember, I think on Letterman, there was another guy who was a Vietnam War DJ, was on Letterman, and talked a little bit about working with Adrian Cronauer. That guy was game show host Pat Sajak.
Oh, no way.
Also a Vietnam DJ.
I did not know that.
Moving on, Robin Leach was 76. Just made a career out of being like a goofball.
Yeah.
Looking at rich people.
I enjoyed listening to his voice.
He had a voice.
Yes.
Yeah, he just kind of came out of nowhere as this goofy TV show host in the 80s with Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, and people just liked watching him run around screaming about how rich everybody was. I remember Dana Carvey doing his impression on SNL as well.
Yes.
Yes, Robin Leach. Here's a weird one, but Will Jordan was 91, and this was a comedian and an actor, but best known for doing an Ed Sullivan impression. And they would just put him on TV shows. Whenever you needed Ed Sullivan, you get Will Jordan, and he comes on and does your Ed Sullivan impression. And the example that I definitely am most familiar with is Billy Joel's Tell Her About It music video, where it's like Billy is performing on the Ed Sullivan show. Remember, like, Rodney Dangerfield's backstage waiting to go on, and there's a dancing bear and whatnot, and you've got fake Ed Sullivan introducing William Joel. But that was Will Jordan. And one more in our miscellaneous category is Kitty O'Neill, was 72. She was a stunt woman and also held all kinds of crazy records. She did a lot of stunt work on Wonder Woman for Linda Carter. She was not Linda's main body double and stunt woman, but she would come on and do certain stunts on Wonder Woman, including while shooting Wonder Woman, she set a record for a high fall by falling 127 feet.
What?
Whoa.
And then later she broke that record by falling 180 feet out of a helicopter.
Wow.
So this is a serious stunt woman. She did stunt work for the Bionic Woman as well. She set a women's land speed record, driving some kind of specially built rocket car to set a record in. But apparently it went 512 miles per hour.
Cool.
Which sounds pretty insane to me.
Yeah.
But
how did she live this long?
Based on what I read, that record she set back in the 70s, I assume, still stands.
Yep. Nice.
She set a water speed record. She set a water skiing record at 104 miles per hour on water skis.
No, thank you.
Man, so there's a life lived by
absolutely.
Kitty O'Neill. Yikes. Final category is science, and that is we have a trio of astronauts here to run through. John Young was 87. He was an astronaut. He was the 9th person to walk on the moon. Only person to have piloted 4 different classes of spacecraft, because he piloted a Gemini, the Apollo Lunar Module, and Space Shuttle.
Neat.
First person to fly solo around the moon, one of only 3 people to have flown to the moon twice, and commanded 2 Space Shuttle flights, including the very first Space Shuttle launch, which was the Columbia in 1981.
Wow.
That's a pretty cool career.
That's a pretty impressive list of... You know?
Yeah, try topping that.
If you're an astronaut, that's impressive.
Right.
This guy, that's an impressive list of credits among astronauts, I think. But we got a couple more, though. Alan Bean was 86. He was the 4th person to walk on the moon. There can't be many people from the moon left either. You got Robillard?
Yes.
Right? Well, Robillard's on Mars. I'm sorry. And finally, we have Donald Peterson was 84. He flew on the maiden voyage of the Challenger space shuttle in 83. So there you go, some impressive astronauts. And we're going to end on Stephen Hawking, was 76. I read his book. I'm sure he must have written several books, but I read the famous one was A Brief History of Time, which came out, I guess, in the late 80s maybe or so. But I read that one. It was very good.
Yeah.
But this was a guy, obviously, you know, one of our great thinkers, but he was like a geek at the same time.
Yeah.
And he would go on The Simpsons and he would go on Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. He was in the with Monty Python final tour that they filmed. He was
oh, wow.
had a little cameo in that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was so cool to see him do pop culture.
So he was one of us.
Yes.
All right, well, that takes us through our list for 2018. We broke it into two parts. It still took too long, but there you go.
Next year, maybe three.
I'm telling you.
Four. We'll do a whole month.
I'm building the list already.
It's started. Right, I know. People are dying already.
It started already. I have a list going, which we'll get to in about a year. For now, though, Cornflake, please get us out of here.
Will do. Please come find us on the internet at facebook.com/flopcast, on Twitter, where our handle is @flopcast, on Instagram, we're @the_flopcast. And we have our website, don't forget about that, flopcast.net.
That's it. All right, everybody, please stay alive.
Yes.
It's going to save us a lot of time and trouble. Just think of us, will you?
Hey, we don't want to talk about you on our show.
In any event, we'll be back next week. Oh, perhaps with some stuff from Arisia.
Yeah.
That'll be good. Perhaps. If we get our act together, if we can record in time, we'll have some Arisia coverage for you next week. Hopefully that's the plan. Or maybe something completely different. Who knows? See you there.
Bye.
Peace and cookies.
Why should I listen to the Nerd Bliss podcast?
Because we go there.
Where?
Everywhere.
Human sexuality.
They don't care what's in your pants. They love you anyway.
Time travelers.
The problem is time will f*** back with you.
Politics and fandom.
What Star Wars has been prior to Disney. It is a white male driven universe.
Find us at nerdblisspodcast.com.
And on social media at nerdblisspod. Part of this complete breakfast and the ESO network.
The Nerd Bliss podcast.
Listen!
Okay, Cornflake, what do you have that's really, really, really quick for the after show? Because it's getting really, really late.
A quick taste of the New Year's resolution to come, where this year I am once a month going to go someplace I have never been before.
Yes.
I got an early start in December, so I guess this doesn't technically count. But toward the end of December, I attended a Broga class. Now, Kevin, believe it or not, this was inspired by you.
Okay.
Because I realized if you could be a geek girl, then I could do yoga for bros, which is what Broga is.
That's right. I ran among the geek girls at Dragon Con. I was officially part of the geek girl run. They gave me a ribbon, so it's official.
And I posed among the yoga bros.
These are yoga bros.
Yes.
Okay.
So Broga is a yoga class geared toward men, but women can attend.
Right.
And
so what's the breakdown of all the major or minor genders that showed up?
It was about half and half, actually.
All right.
Which surprised me. I was not expecting that.
Yeah. What were you expecting?
I was expecting a room full of dudes and me.
But that's what you were thinking. That's what you're looking for, it sounds like.
That's your motive. I would have expected just a completely empty room.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.